If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Introducing a new online workshop. It's called Nurture Imagination in a Waldorf-inspired Outdoor Classroom. It's a one-hour workshop, which is being offered live to our Circle members on March 21st. For non-Circle members, you may listen to the recording on March 22nd. And a little bit more about that after I read the description. So the description is, do you ever wonder what Waldorf education is all about and how you could incorporate this philosophy of education into your outdoor classroom? Waldorf schools emphasize cultivating children's emotional life and imagination. Waldorf educators believe that in order for children to connect more deeply with any subject matter, all subjects are presented through artistic work that includes storytelling, visual arts, drama, movement, music, and crafts. In this workshop, we explore how these materials nurture the imagination. We will also highlight a variety of Waldorf outdoor classrooms to discover how to incorporate these methods into your outdoor classroom. So here is the deal. If you are a Circle member, this workshop is actually a part of your membership. You do not have to pay additional costs. If you would like to become a Circle member, you can purchase our membership for $27 a month, and you get access to not only this workshop live, you get to participate live, and the upcoming Exploring Nature in Spring Masterclass. That's all included for the $27 a month, or you can pay for the whole year. If you do not want to be a member, which is totally fine, you can access this workshop for $37. We will get the workshop recording. You will not have access to the Exploring Nature in Spring Masterclass. You just get access to the workshops. So this decision's yours. The information, the link will be in the show notes, and we would love to have you on March 21st. If you have any questions regarding this workshop or the upcoming masterclass, please email me at victoria@outdoor-classrooms.com, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you have. Talk to you soon. Bye. Meet Robin Brody. She has spent over a decade exploring some of the wild comers of the earth, from sleeping under starry desert skies, diving deep in the ocean, and wandering through lush rainforest. She has continued to foster her insatiable curiosity for this incredible planet. Robin has a degree in child development and has been a leader in the creation of a variety of programs that bring people closer to each other and the natural world. Her heart for humanity and her passion for the earth led her to explore the field of wilderness-based therapy. After years of guiding international trips, backcountry expeditions, and facilitating adventure therapy programs for youth and young adults challenged with mental health and addictions, she has seen firsthand how nature can be fundamental in healing. Robin has facilitated outdoor programs for children with unique needs, including autism, ADD, ADHD, OCD, PTSD, trauma, and addictions, recognizing that the foundational need for love and connection are the same for everyone. By deepening their understanding of how children learn best, Robin and her team create space where they can meet kids where they are at, valuing and seeing their innate natural and brilliance and providing space and time for them to expand their true, unique magic. Roots to Rise Outdoors was born in the middle of a global pandemic, a time where we became even more isolated from each other and from the natural world. It was evident in a world that was driving separation that connection was needed more than ever. Without further ado, Robin Brody.
Hello, everybody. We have Robin Brody here from Roots to Rise. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you so much for having me. I am very excited to be here.
Oh, I am too. So just to let our listeners know, this is an Outdoor Classrooms tour and talk. That means that we will be looking behind the scenes of Robin's incredible program, Roots to Rise. And so she has brought with us today some incredible pictures. So those who are Circle members in our community get to see the behind the scenes. And if you are just listening on the podcast, we welcome you all into our community so you can see this incredible interview. Let's get started.
Great.
So just to backpedal a little bit, if you can tell us a little bit about yourself and give us a peek into your journey before founding Roots to Rise and becoming a nature-based educator. Let's start there.
Sure. So backtracking a couple of years, we'll say, I spent a lot of time traveling and just sort of taking on opportunities and experiences that came my way, which led me into guiding. So I was guiding international trips, which was awesome because I got to travel for free and then would extend my trips and explore various parts of the world. And then that sort of led me into learning about a field called wilderness-based therapy. So, you know, without diving too deep, I'm sure a lot of people have heard about this field, but essentially we were working with young adults and youth at risk, or at one point I was working with young men who were incarcerated using the outdoors instead of sort of traditional settings that you would find in a city. So we would guide them on backcountry expeditions all year round. So I'm in Ontario, and that looks like we were in camping in very cold weather in the winter, canoe trips in the summer, and hiking trips throughout the year, as well as sort of adventure-based, you know, rock climbing or high ropes, that kind of thing. And so that really led me into deepening my understanding of how and why these spaces are so important for all of us, and continue to take on new experiences and jobs. Led me to Central America. I was guiding there for a year, and wow. I worked with kids in the autism spectrum in the outdoors as well. And so, you know, a plethora of experiences, which then led me into starting my own business, which wasn't necessarily planned.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that. So it wasn't planned.
Yeah. So it wasn't planned. I was sort of back in school studying to finish up some courses, just because I was actually interested in pursuing my degree in social work from all of this experience working with young adults and youth. And then COVID hit. So I was sort of heads down in my books and had just sort of suggested to a friend of mine who had their kids in sort of these little pods. You know, they would bring in an educator for, you know, 4 to 6 kids. And I said, you know, why don't I take them out in the afternoon into the ravine right nearby your house? And we can just go and be outside and explore. And so from there, she was like, well, if I'm interested, then I think people, you know, a lot of people would be interested. And I kind of put it out there and had a lot of interest. I had some volunteers come forward, recruited some of my, you know, one of my best friends who helped me out from day one. And my first season, we had about 30 kids in our programs, and I just started to build the business around that. So it was pretty cool to see.
I just got goosebumps. It's amazing, the numbers too. So has this changed your teaching practice? So can you give us sort of, I guess, an overview of Roots to Rise and how it's evolved? It's a young business. So you're talking COVID.
Yeah. So it's pretty new. I think actually something that I thought was interesting, I found some notes that I had written probably over a decade ago. Just about, you know, my own brainstorming of things that I wanted to do or create, you know, in the future, maybe a business, maybe a program. And the notes that I had in there were almost identical to what I've created in Roots to Rise Outdoors. And so it's actually been percolating for a lot longer than I realized.
Yeah.
So the overview, so essentially when I started to facilitate programs, I was working with, you know, mostly older kids and youth, and then so shifted back into the young, the little guys. And, you know, I really wanted to observe and just step back and see and learn from them primarily. So the idea of dumping, you know, a whole lot of information into their brains is great. They get that at school and in most other programs. And for us, it's actually just about providing them space. You know, they are already curious. They're already wanting to learn. They're already creative. So, you know, how can we foster those processes of thought rather than focusing in on a skill, you know, skill that they're learning or an outcome that we've sort of predetermined. So once I started to facilitate and then, you know, 6 months after the program began, it was amazing. I brought on 5 part-time teachers. It was our first training. I think we had over 100 kids a week. And that was the first time that I you know, really articulated what we were doing. So for me, it was, you know, a little bit more intuitive. And then that process really helped me to understand how we can actually transfer that and to other people so that we can, you know, they can facilitate it without me there. So
that's a quick growth. I mean, that's yeah, a lot of kids in a short amount of time. That's absolutely incredible.
I know. And the whole time I'm like, we're going to just grow slow. You know, I'm going to take the pay, you know, see how it goes. And then, you know, 6 months later, we have a team. So
that's incredible to me. So I don't want to forget about these incredible pictures that we're all looking at. Can you explain a little bit about what's happening in these pictures?
Sure. You know, we bring in, I guess, in the picture on the sort of the left with the little girl with the bucket, our educators always have sort of things that can enhance their play with them. So they have, you know, a bit of a staff kit that's filled with not many things. And really, we try to reduce the materials we're using in the outdoors. But those types of things, they can really enhance their own development. If they're pouring or collecting, or they can observe things that are in the bucket. So there's little streams often where we're at, or little shallow kind of, I'm not going to say bodies of water. It feels like a big word for that. features.
Yes.
Looks like she's just sort of exploring with water. And similarly to the middle picture, these guys are a little bit older. So they're more focused in constructive play. So younger kids typically focus in on sensory and exploratory play. What happens when the water pours out, or when we fill the buckets, or how the water is flowing. These guys look like they're building a bridge maybe to cross the little creek, or, you know, how they can control that flow of water. So they're exploring, as you can see, with, you know, natural things, some sticks that they found, but it looks like they're constructively playing. And then on the right, we have a little girl who's been with us for quite a long time. She's such a character. You know, with her, her ideas are so amazing. She has such incredible imagination. So I don't know 100% what's happening in this picture, but I know that her parents contacted me after to wonder if that was like cat hair that she brought home, which it's not, or animal hair. And it's probably from some of the milkweed that's around. She loves fairies, so she could be creating some kind of fairy potion, or she's mixing with her sticks and maybe it's fairy dust. I know that she loves that.
She's in her imagination.
Oh yeah, big time. That's got such an imagination.
Just very quickly, can you tell me where your name came from? Where did Roots to Rise Outdoors come from?
Good question. When I initially started going back to school, my goal at that time was to become, or to potentially have a private practice in the outdoors. And That's the name that I had written down in, I use a notebook actually that I started when I started this program. And that's the name I had on there. And I wrote on top sort of to making my dreams come true. And Roots to Rise was underneath that. And so when this popped up, it just sort of seemed to fit deepening our roots and our values and really staying strong to that so we can rise up and sort of weather any storm and be able to bend and flow as, you know, as our life kind of happens. And I do think, you know, we need to stay connected to our roots and really stay connected. So
I got goosebumps again. Can you give us an overview of, so you do not necessarily have your own outdoor classroom or our own outdoor space. You are going into the public lands. Is that right? Am I correct on that?
Correct. So we've used some local ravines and forested spaces to facilitate our programs. This year is a kind of a big year. So we're launching a farm forest program. We've collaborated with a woman who has land and has a space. So in that will be a little bit different. Also, we've collaborated with in our north location that's launching this spring with another amazing couple who owns like 400 acres, and they share that with the public, and it's open for people to hike and to explore. And so we're collaborating with them. So it started this way with the idea that it's accessible for people, that you don't have to go. For us, it's like a couple of hours north to get to some of the beautiful provincial parks. It's right in our backyards. There's little pockets of space. We don't need much. And when COVID started, I was in a variety of locations so that families could just either walk there, you know, or access it easily with their sort of group. And then what's really cool is that often these kids will bring their families back to those spaces, and they'll show them around and what they've been doing and the fairy houses that they've built, or, you know, all the little things that they've created. So it deepens a bond for them in those spaces, you know, how as opposed to just sort of quickly moving through a hike or quickly moving through a forest. We sort of tend to stay put and explore from there. And yeah, it's definitely it's fluid. So yeah, so it's a little bit of both now.
And it's not even, my next question is sort of how you've evolved over the years, but you've kind of been alluding to all of that. I loved how you described program flow. Why is this so important to your program and in all of our children's lives and even our own?
Yeah, good question. So I think what I've been inspired by many kind of works of art and pieces in this field that resonated with me. So I think having consistency is important for kids, and some kind of structure provides safety for children. So as much as we and this community, you know, we really value the idea of unstructured and uninterrupted play, within that they need some kind of containment. So they know where and how they can explore. And our program Rhythm provides, well, when I created it too, it provided my staff also containment. So how can we introduce new things that not necessarily, as I mentioned before, will reach a certain outcome, but will provide them opportunity to expand various processes of thought? So whether it's a game that we're playing, you know, how can they think critically together to move through something maybe where there needs to be compromise, space to talk that out, space to think it through. We bring in some kind of creative element. So for obvious reasons, you know, it's open-ended often. It's just experimenting and exploring with various materials. We love the idea of storytelling that brings us together. They sometimes tell stories. We create stories together. I think that's a beautiful avenue for another window to open up their minds and to share really resonant stories with them. And then we sort of end with a sit spot, which I'm sure some of this community is aware of. You know, just a minute to take a couple of breaths, or they create maybe something in that space. They choose a tree. We sometimes just listen. We sometimes just breathe. And we all need that. You know, I think we all, it's not just just for them. And it's interesting because when we started to train around this rhythm and I was like, there's no way 4-year-olds are going to want to sit for a couple minutes. And now we see that some kids seek it out, you know, and they're really looking forward to it, or they, in the middle of their program, they want to go and sit in their sit spot. And so we see that need for it by how they're communicating that with us. So within that program rhythm, it's funny because I teach sort of, or we talk about this, but oftentimes it doesn't necessarily look like that. There's no time limits on these things. We gauge through our observations where kids are at, how can we bridge these connections, what ideas can we evoke for them, and then what ideas do they have where we can expand, we can help them expand through time and space. So it's very fluid, and which is why I've used those terms, you know, rhythm and flow, as opposed to structure and schedule, you know, feels quite limited and defined. So it's definitely not that for us.
Yeah. We you say at the end, how you close out your sessions, we do something very, very similar in our Secret Gardens Outdoor Classroom, where we, with our older children, we have journals. Mm-hmm. And they, it's so interesting. They come out of school and they're very, they just are out of their rhythm.
Yeah.
Sort of by the end of our time together, they are seeking out their journals and they cannot wait to just sit down and be in their sit spot and just reflect and be quiet. And it's a really, really beautiful way to end a time together and being in nature and doing that. And the parents are always like, whoa, what's happening? when they see their kids are just, but I do leave them out, the journals out, and that they can choose to go to be reflective at any point. And it's so interesting that they need that. They really do seek it out, as you said.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Risk play. I would love to get your insight on risk play. I see here we've got kids climbing trees and whatnot. I would love to know your philosophy around and theory around risk play and how you manage it.
Sure. Yeah, I think this is such an important part of what we do. Just to back it up a little bit, a lot of my experience has been in very high risk jobs. Working with high risk population in high risk settings, and both being real risk. You know, I can go into this for a long time, and you know, there's perceived risk and real risk. So my personal relevant experience has been exposed to that. And so I've seen the value in it. And personally, I'm a little bit of an adventure seeker and like taking risks. And so, you know, that resonates with me. So with the program, I've created quite a comprehensive risk assessment for our teachers to use. And that's really broken down into kind of three parts, where one is environmental. So what's happening in the environment? You know, what are we looking at? Are there trees that have come down? Are there new branches? Is it icy? Is it slippery? Are there rock? What does the ground look like here? Has it changed? Is there garbage? So what's going on in the environment? And then we look at group assessment. That there's many sort of elements in that, but are they a new group? Have they ever had the experience of being outdoors before? Is it our first day or is it the 12th? Where are they? And how can we maybe provide a little bit more containment for groups that aren't necessarily aware of this kind of environment and how to navigate it? So within that, we're looking also at what are each individual's developmental levels and needs? And so are they able to listen? If I say stop, that's too high. You know, are they able to hear me? Maybe I need to make sure I'm close by. Maybe they can't, they need to look at my face when I'm speaking. You know, so I'm assessing all of these types of things sort of within the first couple of weeks. And we wouldn't necessarily go to a really risky area right at the beginning because I don't know the kids. These are the times we're developing relationships. They're developing trust with us and vice versa, you know. And so we talk about all of that together. And then dynamic, you know, there's a lot more involved there, but dynamic risk is sort of in the moment. And when we can see those kids climbing on the right, we have a few rules around climbing, you know, and we talk to them about that. Our teachers are always close by. We have limited kids. You know, it's not like 12 kids are climbing at one time. Maybe there's a couple of kids who need a little bit more support. So then we'll manage how that group is accessing those features in the forest. We're also sort of close by. We help them to assess those risks. That's really the goal. How do they take the time to look around to make sure logs are stable, that there's three or four parts of their body touching at one time. If we go too high, look how far that drop can be, you know, and we're talking to them about all of these things. And we also don't actually manipulate like their little bodies, obviously without permission, but in these kind of riskier situations. So for instance, if a child wasn't able to get up on a log like that or a tree like that, we would tell them, well, your body's not quite ready to get up there. Why don't we try this area over here? And so that's, you know, even if they're climbing over a log to get to the other side, you know, we'll stop and say, well, how else can you get around, you know, that log or that branch or whatever it is. Obviously, if they're really stuck and they're up there and they can't get down, we'll obviously help them. But what that does is helps them to really tune into their own body and actually manage how they're balancing. Because if I'm holding them, even if they're balancing on a log and they're leaning on me, they're not learning where their balance needs to be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those sorts of things are really important that we try to kind of foster. But again, we're probably not taking kids to climbing sort of area in the first couple of weeks where we're assessing where they're at. And maybe they have some developmental challenges and they may not be able to grip something that hard, or maybe their balance is off, or maybe they may not be able to manage that on their own. And so we're going to then expose them to areas where they can freely explore and it's not a whole lot of no's for them, managing and exposing them to environments that are conducive to where they're at and where the group's at.
I love that. Wow. We could just talk about that the whole time.
I know. It's a lot. Like, how deep do you want to go? I could go into it a lot. Yeah.
It's very, very, very important. And I love the structure that you've put around it. And obviously the training that you have done for your educators, the teachers that you're working with. So it's really interesting. We're sort of moving into curriculum. So where do you find your curriculum? Where do you create your curriculum? Where do you find inspiration? What leads you?
In curriculum, I use we use emergent curriculums. Again, we don't come in with these preconceived notions of what we're going to teach at certain periods of time. We come in with ideas that evoke their curiosity and imagination and creativity. And then we listen to their ideas. So by our approach of using open-ended questions and support and really listening to them, they come up with it. I would say most of the ideas, the expectation for my educators is that we have a framework which is going to be developmentally appropriate. We use obviously the seasons and what's happening around that. So we come in with these ideas and then they're expanded from there. Pinterest is awesome. You know, there is a plethora of ideas on the internet. I love Pinterest. I have my own board and what's cool is like we bring in ideas that then it turn into something totally different. So like on the right, those are really cool. Like they ended up like painting a little bit of snow and then we used that in one of their forts. So they actually were decorating one of their forts. And so another huge, I have to give a ton of credit to my team because they are amazing with ideas. We bring on not necessarily, you know, nature-based educators. We've had yoga teachers. We've had musicians. Mm. One of our teachers was a Cirque du Soleil performer. We've had naturalists. We have teachers, you know, so we bring in such a cool group of people. And one of our teachers, that is ink that's made from mulberries.
So, oh, wow.
And they're an artist. And so they bring in such interesting and creative ideas for kids to explore with. So the kids were able to see how that whole process was created. And then obviously exploring with that kind of ink. And I think it was like when you add in lemon juice and salt, it changes the consistency and the coloring. And like, I was blown away. I was like, this is so cool. So I have to give a lot of credit. You give my educators a lot of creative freedom, again, within this container and within this flow and within our approach. And so they come up with, I mean, we've had some amazing storytellers who some of these kids have talked about for 3 years. They asked where some of our teachers were from, like summer one, who they would tell these amazing stories and create this whole world in the forest. So yeah, I have to give a lot of credit to them.
That is so neat. Any projects? You had already mentioned that you are collaborating with a bunch of different places. Are there any other things that you are working on?
There was this timing. Yes, we are working on a lot right now. Funny you ask. So we we're launching our first kind of satellite program in Owen Sound. We have an amazing woman who I worked with many, many years ago. She's a pediatric occupational therapist, has worked with kids in the outdoors. So she's leading sort of our programs up there. Wow. We're launching this farm forest program in the summer, which is kind of a multitude of collaborations. So with the woman who has the farm, and then I'm also collaborating with Carrie Mazels, who has her own company. She specializes in working with kids with autism and neurodiversities. And so we're collaborating on essentially layering my training program with sort of these levels of support and how to work with kids on the spectrum, how to support them in these spaces, how us as educators can really provide these inclusive spaces for everybody. By the nature of our program, we already do that, and she's helping us to really articulate that. And so we'll be offering that for all of our teachers. Hopefully eventually we'll be putting it out for other educators to partake in. And so our program at the farm will have also an offering for parents to use their autism funding in our program. So it's, yeah, there's a lot going on, but it's very exciting. Yeah.
It's just amazing to think that this just started at COVID. I mean, it's like mind boggling, but I hear there's like a business. I would love to just very quickly sort of go behind the scenes in terms of being a business owner, the business piece of it.
Yeah. So that's been a learning on as we go kind of thing. I don't have a business background. I've been playing in the woods for the last decade and you know, guiding trips and all the things. So this really, I mean, I am incredibly grateful for the support around me. I've had people who come in who've helped me work out my accounting and figure out how to use the systems there. You know, a friend of mine built my website, which was unbelievable. I had volunteers coming in to help me right off the bat, people spreading the word and guiding me along the way. You know, when I've created my policies, I've sent them out to trusted friends in my circle, and they've helped edit and you know, bring that back, giving me opinions and suggestions. And then, you know, business mentors in my world who have been amazing guiding me in making decisions or thinking about them before moving forward. So social media was never my forte. I was hoping to not actually be on social media, and that didn't last very long because everyone was like, you need to be on social media. So I've learned how to, you know, use and create posts. And that's actually something I really enjoy doing now. Another avenue for me of creation and also of education and expression and connection. And as we do with the kids, that's something I really try to embody and hold that integrity with my team. And as a business owner, how can we explore and play and connect together as we grow, you know, on these multiple levels? It's not just what we do with the kids, but how can we as educators continuously grow and explore new avenues and fall and get back up? And what does risky play look like for us that may not be balancing on a log, but maybe, I don't know, trying a new location or launching a training program? You know, and so those things are important for me to embody. If that's what we say we do, we need to do it through and through.
Mm. I love that because I think us as a lot of educators don't see ourselves as business people. So I think it's really important to just sort of share each other's stories in that realm, and that it is a lot of, I love how you put it in the frame of risk that mm-hmm. if we keep putting ourselves out there. You also seem like the master of collaboration, that you aren't afraid of working with other people and showing and just having other people, as we are greater. I always believe we are greater together and that we can lift each other. And I think your examples are just one after the other of how you collaborate with other people just to be of better service. So I admire that. I love that.
Oh, 100%. If it wasn't for the people in my world, this wouldn't be, you know, it's, a huge part of my life for sure.
So just a quick, this is maybe a heavy question, but what's your philosophy on just having time for nature education in today's society with all the other pressing needs of students?
I think it's vital. I think it's a need. I think it's a basic fundamental need that kids are moving farther and farther away from. I think it's this could be in our part two, but it is meeting these elements up for all of us that with, you know, increased screen times and more schedules and more structures, not that I think we need to learn how to navigate the screens and all of those things, but how I feel that it's not necessarily balanced. And so we are not separate from nature, you know, we are part of it. And I had this thought a few weeks ago, it was like, how can we learn from it as opposed to learning about it? Because learning about it, we're separate from it. This tree, that butterfly, these leaves. But how can we actually learn from it and be in it and less information and more presence, I think, is needed. Just like being there and noticing. I think we're inundated with information. I think it's a noisy world out there. And so especially for these little kids, they don't know how to decipher all of that yet. I don't know how to decipher all of it yet. So I think it's a need. I don't think it's something that is a choice. And so hopefully we can, you know, and we can access it if it's through, you know, families or programs or whatever it might be.
And do your families or folks, obviously probably don't because they're coming to you, but do they get concerned about the mess, maybe the unpredictability, like just the emergent part of your program?
Yeah, so not really. There's a few, but I'm clear. Your kid is going to be messy and they might be wet. Don't bring them in their fancy clothes. And if you do, those fancy clothes are probably going to be muddy, you know, and sometimes they'll come out and the kid has, I don't know, whatever. I've had kids literally just sliding head to toe mud.
Oh, you know, I love it.
Texted a family being like, I think you need to bring full change of clothes, like, you know, everything, not just pants, not just like boots. They need socks. They need underwear for sure. It's multiple layers. I think through communication, that again, that's an important part for me. It's not just the kids, but how are we connecting with families? How are we, you know, really communicating why this is such a valuable space for them, whether it's with me or other programs or their own families or friends, whatever it might be. So I think that so far, you know, it feels like I've done a good job at communicating, because I don't get a lot of concerned parents. I'll come out of a program being like, so their, you know, socks are wet, pants are wet, this is muddy. Then they've got an extra pair that's also wet. They're like, no problem. We know, we expect it. So
that's awesome. That's
and then,
awesome.
You know, I think it's building that trust with them also. So when I was really in the field at the beginning, I have, you know, built some actually really good relationships with the parents and with the families. So they know that we're not like waist deep in the cold in the ravine in the winter, but in the summer, they're coming out wet and the risk is different.
Yeah.
So I think that's a piece, is that trust and that relationship, so that if they have concerns, I'm happy to talk about them and vice versa.
It's, yeah, great answer. So we talked about you training teachers. Is there any other thing that you would like to add to that in terms of what that might look like?
So this Yeah. So with this new training, right now we are in our pilot phase. We're putting together again with, I have my program manager, who's a pediatric occupational therapist. She's layering in with her lens. And then we have Carrie, who's coming in with the autism neurodiversity lens. So we're creating, I think it's going to be amazing. And I've created a really cool framework. I'm not going to give it away because it's very on brand, but I was very excited about it. So I think what we're hoping for in the not very long term is that teachers or educators will be able to access this training virtually, which will be, you know, a mix of kind of content through a training portal. It'll have, you know, combination of videos of Carrie and I kind of, working through some of the modules. And then depending on where you're at, we're also going to be offering, an amount of like consultation session. So are you, do you already have an outdoor program? Are you looking to implement that in where you're at? You know, what does that look like and how can we support you along the way and dive into some of these things a little bit more? So if issues are arising, how can we help you navigate that and continue to kind of, build on that training over time? We'll add, there's so much here. There's so much depth. And that's something that I've seen with my teachers is we start with sort of the basics of safety, of program flow, but then we move into behavior management and how are we, with the skills of observation and open-ended play and all these other concepts that sort of layer onto each other. So I think that, so again, we're going to see kind of start with one thing and see how it evolves to the needs that are out there. What do people need? So staying open to that, I think for me is important without this like super directed path.
I love it. Just again, more pictures.
There's
one of your educators.
So I have to just pipe in for one. That was a moment I'll never forget. So one of our educators, she's a musician. So she would bring her guitar in. That's not something I do or would do. I can't sing or play guitar. and she was just playing some chords. And again, this little girl started to freestyle. And so for a couple of minutes, she was just like really flowing. And it was, I have it on video. It was such a cool moment that it wasn't, again, this space where everyone's learning the same song and we're all singing together. Maybe there's some of that, but it was just the space to explore with music and she was exploring with her words and it was really cool. It was really, really cool. Yeah.
That's so beautiful. That's if you were to give one seed of inspiration, that's what I say, or a tip to an educator or a parent, what would that be?
I'd say slow down, go outside and just take your time.
I mean, that's
a secondary seed, but also, let your kids lead, see what they're interested in, see what they're going to do. And if they don't do anything, just let them do that. Yeah. Take your time. Try not to rush through those spaces and sit for a bit and listen. And it takes us a minute to really land in some of those spaces. And it takes kids a good amount of time to actually get into play. So I think we underestimate the value of time.
I love that. Beautiful. Is there anything else you'd like to share? Where could we find you? Thank you for the beautiful, beautiful photos. So please.
Oh, good.
Anything you'd like to share?
I mean, always. I love talking about this. I'm on Instagram at Roots to Rise Outdoors. I'm super excited. We're actually we've updated the website. We're going to have trainings available soon. So, connect with us, reach out. We love connecting to hear what other people are doing. And if you're in Ontario and you have kids, come check us out, come drop in, connect.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much. Likewise. I appreciate you having us and us here. I don't know who us is. All of the kids.
Thank you for joining us here at the Outdoor Classrooms podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with anybody who you think would enjoy it and follow us on Instagram. We'd love to continue the conversation. If you want to continue the conversation even deeper, please join us in the Circle community. The purpose of the Circle is to support, guide, and push you as you continually grow and sustain your outdoor classroom by providing the tools to help you set the right goals, then actually follow through in achieving those goals with the support of our amazing community. Each month, 24/7, you get guidance and support from myself. You get to begin your journey with our new member roadmap. You get access to our outdoor teaching boot camp. You get to interact and learn from guest experts who are on our podcast. They come into our membership and join us to continue the conversations. You get to connect and collaborate during 2 live sessions a month. You get access to all our online workshops and masterclasses. You get to dig deeper with our membership missions each month, and you get to become an ambassador of joy for children. I hope you can join us. You get all of this. You get to become a member of our family at Outdoor Classroom. So I hope you can join us. I will share the link in the show notes, and we'll see you later. Come join us.